Attack of the killer tomatoes. Attack of the killer tomatoes. They'll beat you, bash you, squish you, mash you, chew you up for brunch, and finish you off for dinner or lunch. They're marching down the halls. They're crawling up the walls.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Stephen Schwartz, who's a senior fellow at the Samueli Institute and a research associate of cognitive sciences at the Laboratory for Fundamental Research. He is also the editor of the daily web publication SchwartzReport.net, where he identifies and analyzes trends that are affecting the future. His work has appeared in the Washington Post, Smithsonian, American Heritage, American History, Omni, Harper's, and he has an article at Explore, the Journal of Science and Healing, The Great Experiment, Genetically Modified Organisms, Scientific Integrity, and National Wellness. Welcome to Background Briefing, Stephen Schwartz.
Welcome to you. Nice to talk to you again, Ian.
And recently I did an interview about what is being derisively called the Monsanto Protection Act, which was a rider that was inserted into a must-pass spending bill recently by Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri, which is the home state for Monsanto. And it basically protects Monsanto from any federal lawsuit and instructs the Department of Agriculture to ignore lawsuits against people who are concerned about genetically engineered crops. So you've looked into some of the research to do with animals that have been fed by GMO foods, lab animals, and these studies on the surface are extremely alarming, but they've created a kind of battle within the scientific community. So is there a pattern here? The fact that Monsanto has the political clout to essentially be above the law and to get a senator to put a bill in that makes them immune from any prosecution and essentially puts them above the judicial branch of government. Is that also happening in terms of their clout in the research community?
Well, I mean, yes. Let's just pause for a second, Ian, and say this is quite extraordinary that we're involved in what amounts to a huge laboratory animal experiment, and we're the animals. If you think about this for a second, you've got a law in which they've done something which it's very unclear what the long-term effects are going to be, but should they be terrible, you have no recourse. I cannot believe that will stand, but that is a measure of the corruption of the American government by large corporate interests. I mean, Blunt is not only did it, he's proud of having done it. It's part of a much larger trend which is going on all over the world, actually, that deals with the commodification of the food system. Because that's really what we're talking about. I mean, the GMO part is part of it, but the deeper thing that's going on, which people just don't seem to have any true awareness of, is that the entire food system of the world is being taken over by a few companies. Just to give you a couple of examples, 4 corporations control 66% of the pork packing market in the United States. 4 control 58% of poultry. 4 control 84% of the beef market. 3 companies control 90% of the global grain trade. And 4 companies own 48% of all the grocery retailers. So what you have is an extraordinary concentration of power in a tiny number of corporates, interests, who routinely, thanks to Citizens United, have the ability to influence government policy. This latest thing with the Monsanto Protection Act that Blunt sponsored is just one of the more egregious, but by no means the only example of this complete corruption of the world's food system and turning it into a commodity process to enrich a small group at the risk of the health of the many.
Well, of course, the good news is that it's a rider to a continuing spending resolution, which expires in 6 months, so that there's a chance for citizens to get aroused. But at the heart of this issue is whether or not this giant corporation, Monsanto, which after all was the manufacturer of Agent Orange that caused so many problems in Vietnam, the defoliant, and with the American vets. And now, of course, they're advertising themselves as being committed to sustainable agriculture, committed to the farmer. Their website claims that the company helps farmers be successful and produce healthier food while also reducing agriculture's impact on our environment. Now, that's nothing new. Oil companies tell us how much they care about the environment, and we saw what happened with BP in the Gulf. And now they've
Or Arkansas.
Right, but and since then they keep telling us how much they've cleaned up the Gulf and how everything's great. So, corporate propaganda aside, what is going on here with GMOs and their risk to consumers who eat GMO food, based upon research with rats? That's, I think, really where the rubber meets the road in this issue.
Well, I think you are correct. The latest controversy that has arisen occurred as a result of work done by a French molecular biologist, Giles-Eric Seralini, who's a professor and departmental chair of molecular biology at the University of Caen in France, and who heads the research team for the French National Center for Scientific Research and the National Institute for Agriculture Research. And he published a paper which included some pictures, which I think it was the pictures that really did it, showing these tumorous rats who were fed GMO foods. And he was attacked, and there's lots of to-ing and fro-ing. And at one level, it looks like, well, the study may not have been as good as it should have been. But, you know, in the world of nutrition genetics, nothing is ever quite what it seems. You have to go back to who did the research and who paid for the research. And as it turns out, Seralini is just one of a growing number of scientists. This has become such a big war between the corporate-funded scientists and university or the non-corporate-funded scientists that the Independent Science News got a letter that was signed by a long list of scientists who were very concerned about even threats of physical violence. For instance, Andreas Caresco, who's a professor of molecular embryology at the University of Buenos Aires, who identified the risks of one of the active ingredients in Roundup and its effects. And 26 of these scientists wrote to because they were concerned about not just scientific pressure, but literally physical threats that they felt for publishing research which did not accord with the corporate interests. And if you look around the world, I mean, you could, for instance, Alexei Surov, who headed a Russian team, did a study in which he fed GMOs to a species of hamster called Campbell hamsters. He fed them on Monsanto GM soy for 2 years across three generations. And what he discovered is all sorts of strange pathologies began developing in these rats. For instance, they began having hair grow on the inside of their mouths. And the key thing was they became infertile. And this is one of the constants that you see across all of this research. What's happened, I think, is that, you know, we're early days in GMO research and genetic manipulation, and initially researchers thought these things were not straightforward exactly, but fairly linear. And what we're discovering as time has gone on, and there's several levels of this, is that these when you cause these genetic changes, that it sets in motion not just the linear difference that you're trying to achieve, but a whole set of unintended interactions that produce all sorts of things. I mean, Austrian researchers reported that fourth-generation Monsanto GMO corn-fed mice became completely infertile, and that the offspring of the mother rats fed the GMO soy within 3 weeks were smaller than the non-GMO-fed rats. But that's one aspect. Then there's a whole other aspect, and that's the idea that many of the assumptions that the use of GMO crops were originally based on, which was they were going to be resistant to various kinds of pests and things that attack them, insects of one kind or another, that has proven not to be true. There was just a publication in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences coming out of the University of Arizona that specifically found that the widely used idea of putting these two or more toxins sort of for redundant killing, the idea being that these crops would kill not one but several pests, that what actually happens is that the pests, they don't all get killed off, and they mutate, and then they become resistant. So these things become more and more toxic, but the insects and other pests that prey upon them become more and more horrific. Sort of we're the unintended consequence is to create kind of monster pests and predators. And the net of this is that we are conducting what amounts, at least based on the evidence. Now, again, I am entirely an evidence-based person. So based on the evidence, it would appear that we have engaged in a huge worldwide animal experiment in which human beings are the lab rats. And it's not at all clear, at this stage anyway, what the long-term consequences of ingesting GM grains and animals that have been manipulated genetically, what the long-term effects of that is going to be. And now with this Monsanto Protection Act that Senator Blunt has sponsored, which Monsanto apparently wrote, what they're trying to do is to relieve themselves of having any responsibility for the outcome of these experiments. It's just, I just find it appalling. I applaud the research at one level because ultimately it may do wonderful things for us, but I don't think it's quite ready for prime time. And the idea that people, that it's going to be commercialized anyway and that people are then going to be subjected to who knows what and have no recourse is really quite monstrous, both ethically and just as a question of national wellness.
Well, we saw that play out here in the state of California with Proposition 37 in the last ballot, which was a GMO labeling proposition that meant foods with GMO that were made with GMO seeds and were genetically manipulated in any way would have to be labeled, which seems reasonable. And the big companies like Monsanto spent enormous amount of money. It was initially very popular with substantial majorities were for Prop 37, but by the time they had spent all this money on television advertising saying with the so-called scientists and authority figures saying this was a bad idea, actually they're mostly arguing that it was going to cost more at the supermarket, it failed. So that would seem to be, you know, I don't understand why if there are some questions about the consequences of GMO genetically altered food products, why it would be wrong to label them and give the consumer the choice until we find out whether or not they're harmful.
Well, I mean, here's the question. I mean, ask yourself this. If they think that GMOs are so great, why don't they want to label them? I mean, people are dying to label their products organic because they know that if they label it organic, it's going to sell better. You would think if this stuff was so great that the companies that produce these GMO products would be all too happy to have them labeled because it would be a marketing plus. The fact that they have gone to enormous length, and yes, Prop 37 is an example of the level of corruption we're talking about. It started out with above 90% approval rating, and by pouring in millions and millions of dollars, they were able basically to buy a proposition outcome. And the idea is to obfuscate and make secret what they're doing. That's the real issue. If it's such a great idea, why don't they want it to be transparent and everybody to know about it? And the answer is that they don't know that it's great. They really don't know, because nobody knows what the long-term consequences of this is going to be. And they are willing to go to extraordinary lengths to suppress this. Let me just take a second to say, tell you one story. This is about a man named Arpad Puste, who is a biologist at the Rowett Institute in Aberdeen, Scotland, which is the top nutritional research lab in the United Kingdom. And he'd been working there for 35 years, right? He first published his first paper in this field in 1961. He'd been publishing ever since. He'd published 300 peer-reviewed papers. And he also wrote 12 books. So this is a guy who was one of the international authorities. And in the early 90s, he got a $3 million grant from the British government to design a system for safety testing genetically modified organisms. Perfectly reasonable. And that the idea was that he would establish testing protocols that could be used throughout the European market. And he had 20 scientists from three other facilities working with him. This was a major push to try to set up standards that would establish what was safe in genetically modified organisms. Very straightforward, reasonable, appropriate, safe regulation. And he felt very strongly about it. He was the perfect guy to do this. So in 2002, he put out a paper. It said, "Can science give us the tools for recognizing this health?" And nearly 10 years after introducing these foodstuffs, there were only still a handful of papers. So he developed a protocol for feeding GMO potatoes to rats. I mean, very straightforward. And the potatoes had been modified to produce a chemical called lecithin. And the idea was to discourage pests from attacking the potatoes. And so he fed regular potatoes to some of the rats, and he fed these genetically modified potatoes to other rats. Very straightforward stuff. Within 10 days, the animals developed potentially precancerous cell growth, smaller brains, livers, and testicles, partially atrophied livers, and damaged immune systems. And that was just a part of it. And so he published this, let this be known, and he got a request from an interview, and following his institute's, which is very standard, protocol about media contacts, he went to his institute and the Rowett and said, "You know, I've been asked to do this media interview, and can I do it?" And they said, "Okay, yes, you can do it." And the interview was released in August of 1998, and he was hailed as a hero by his institute and other genetic scientists. And then Tony Blair's office, who was a pro-GM prime minister, Tony Blair's office called up. And the next morning, he was fired. He was silenced with threats of a lawsuit. His team was dismantled. The protocols were never implemented. His institute and the UK government together launched a smear campaign to destroy his reputation. It took an act of Congress, an act of Parliament, to lift the gag order against him. And eventually he got the study published in The Lancet. So this was a man whose life work was destroyed because he had the temerity to come forward and say, "We need to test GMO foods, and here is a protocol for doing it, and when I did it, I got these results." That is an extraordinary example of the level of scientific warfare that is going on to protect what amounts to billions of dollars of sales of a product whose long-range implications we do not understand.
Well, just in closing, Stephen Schwartz, I understand that Russian researchers from the National Association of Genetic Safety are going to put online a live study with web cameras of cages of rats that are being fed GMO food, and they're going to be broadcast live around the world, available 24/7 on the internet. So we will look forward to that, and I thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Stephen Schwartz, who's a senior fellow at the Samueli Institute, and he is also the editor of the daily web publication SchwartzReport.net, where he identifies and analyzes trends that are affecting the future. His work has appeared in the Washington Post, Smithsonian, American Heritage, American History, Omni, Harper's, and he has an article at Explore, the Journal of Science and Healing, The Great Experiment, Genetically Modified Organisms, Scientific Integrity, and National Wellness. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Nick Guarino. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.